listening to Rage Quit Recon with Nathan Starwalt and Dennis Lee.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Rage Quit Recon. I'm your host, Nathan. Today I've got with me...
Evan.
And...
Mike.
And we're talking about Circle and what you need to know about them. This is kind of like our... We've decided to break up the episodes to cover a couple of casters and then a couple of key pieces. Hopefully, if you're going back and you want to look through and hear what we think about specific pieces... You'll go back and kind of like view it as kind of like an encyclopedia.
Yeah, originally this was supposed to be the Things to Know series on the regular Rage Quit Radio podcast. And then it dawned on us that, A, us talking for 2 hours is a really long time, and B, there's no way in hell to cover the faction in 2 hours.
Yeah, or even because we talked about splitting it into two separate podcasts, but even that's probably stretching it too.
Yeah, so we're definitely gonna
try to break it down into bite-size consumable pieces.
It makes you feel better. The only other similar podcasts I've seen that cover entire factions are like two episodes, 12 hours apiece.
Oh. Are they British?
No.
Oh, well, that's amazing, actually. And if you listen in the opening, it did say with Nathan Starwalt and Dennis Lee. Dennis is in Hong Kong choking on smog. So hopefully he will make it back in one piece to take his seat at the table so that I don't have to sit here and sound like an idiot because I don't play Circle. So I'll get to ask all the questions everyone out there would be asking you because I know nothing. So
yeah, and this and so I realized that this is July and we talked about doing the Things to Know in the middle of June. So hopefully with this schedule we'll actually have something to show you on a regular basis. By the time we get to the next faction, you know, you'll have plenty of notification and let us, you know, vote and actually play test it.
and this will be, for those who are wondering, Rage Quit Radio, we've expanded the number of shows, obviously. Last couple weeks ago, you would have heard Rage Quit Refit Episode 1, and that's going to be a monthly podcast. Rage Quit Radio itself will maintain being a weekly show. But this show, Rage Quit Recon, name pending, because we asked you on Episode 21 of Rage Quit Radio to give us a name. And if you come up with something cooler than Rage Quit Recon, which may or may not be hard, we will, you know, we'll look at using that. But this will be at least monthly.
Yes, at least
it may be. It may be more often. So
we brought Evan on because Evan has actually played Circle, unlike the hosts of Rage Quit Radio.
I have played Circle among pretty much every other faction.
Yeah, I guess we'll kind of talk about the format. I've got. I'll go ahead and tell you the three casters that we're going to cover today and the three key pieces of Circle. We've got we got PKA, P. Balder, and Kruger 2. And I did that mostly to drive people with OCD crazy.
Mainly me.
And then we've got, we're going to talk about the Gorax, the Warpwolf Stalker, and the Shifting Stones as well. Because most Circle lists are going to have one of these three, if not all three of those non-caster pieces in them. I was going to talk about all the great Circle casters, but Mike was like, you should probably spread that out over a couple of podcasts, and I agree with him.
Well, we would like people to listen to every episode instead of just one.
Right, because the Mozart Grail podcast would never be listened to.
We need to say Cro-Mac or Emirvana.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Somebody brings a lot of
Kruger 2 should have been.
Yeah, probably. In my humble opinion, I think Kruger 2 is the best Circle caster.
Well, you have a deep love for him.
But I do love his bald head.
So who are we talking about first?
We're going to talk about Kea, and we're going to kind of fumble through this because this is kind of a learning experience for us. So the goal is to give you the abilities that she has, plus her spells and her feats, and talk about any notable stats that Kea may have. Or any caster may have. And then we'll talk about the general health pool and survivability. I don't really want to grade, because who does that? Road to War?
Chain Attack does that, too. Yeah. But to me, it's very subjective.
Yes, it is very subjective. And it could change at any time.
It also depends on who's using them. Grades are silly.
My biggest gripe about anything being graded as top tier, bottom tier, anything of that nature is it assumes that there's a vacuum.
Correct.
And the problem is you're never actually playing in a vacuum, So, to me, grading skills are incredibly subjective.
Sometimes you're playing against double mammoth.
Yeah.
And you gotta figure it out from there. So, so first off, Kaeya the Wildborn. Her stat line is fairly unimpressive. She's only got a mat of 6, which is pretty bad for casters that want to. If you ever actually wanted to try to melee with her, it's pretty atrocious. Her defensive stats are pretty garbage too. She's defense 16, armor 13. And she's only got 16 boxes of health.
She's speed 7, though.
She is speed 7, which is good.
She has a reach weapon.
She does have a reach weapon, and she's Fury 6.
The weapon's got critical knockdown.
Yes, the weapon is critical knockdown, and Kaeya, the only rules on the back of the Kaeya's card, she's got crit knockdown, and she has pack hunters. Living war beast in this model's battle group is control area gain, +2 on melee attack rolls. That ability is phenomenal, in my opinion.
She has 6 beast points.
Yes.
And without leaving the front of her card here too fast, she's also got Pathfinder. Splinter is a P+S 11 staff, essentially, and it's got magical weapon as well. So the 16 defense is, I don't think, is atrocious.
No, she is a Horde's Warlock, so that means that she can transfer damage if she gets hit. However, if she is getting hit, if she's getting shot and you're taking armor, you're taking damage against a PAL 13 roll, that's more damage than the beast would have taken.
The armor is the rough part, and the 16 can fool a new player into thinking that she is more survivable than she is.
Yeah, she's not.
Not even close. So, I mean, that's why she has some escape tactics.
At armor 13, you have to be careful about stuff like Mage Hunter Strike Force, because just the sheer number of rolls will plink you to death. Any kind of chip damage, to borrow a fighting game term.
Sure.
Any kind of chip damage can add up over the long run.
I mean, mat 16 though, or defense 16 does take mat 6 pretty much out of the equation. I mean, people need tens to hit you. That pretty much puts a stop to like Bane Knights off of Gatsby, because people aren't
without any debuffs.
Yeah,
if you can avoid the debuffs.
If you can avoid the debuffs,
and if they can't boost.
Correct.
Yeah, but Bane Knights.
Sure.
They can't boost that hit. 16 is with stuff that can boost a hit, but I mean infantry and a lot of things that don't have the ability to boost.
Yeah, even Mat 7,
it takes it out of play.
Even Mat 7's got a 1 in 3 chance.
Yeah,
hitting,
I mean it's decent. It's a good. It's definitely over the break in terms of that magic number of defense.
It's good as long as you don't play stupid and exposure.
Right.
Well, with Circle, you can't play stupid.
Correct. Well, you can. I've watched it happen. I've seen Chris Brown play Circle.
That's okay. But Circle probably has...
He's not here to defend himself.
No, he's not. And actually, his one and only year qualifying for the Invitational, he's playing Circle.
Yeah.
So
The thing with Circle is has a very steep learning curve. The amount of skill to power ratio is very high. You can't... It's not like a lot of like factions where you can just kind of pick up and go, like men off of Kador, where there's just kind of like... The skill to power level ratio is... Pretty straightforward.
A lot of listeners may be asking why we're even covering PKA in this podcast, like one of the first ones. And it's pretty simple. She's the battle box caster.
Yeah.
So if anybody is looking to get into Circle, or they play against, like, if one of their friends are starting off, you know, that like there's some stuff about PKA that it's pretty cheeky compared to other battle box casters. She's not like a P Krios where you can just kind of pop feet and have your way with their army. So, Pack Hunters is a really spoiling ability, because you take like a Feral Warpwolf and it's mat 7, and then you put +2 on top of that, it goes to mat 9. That's awesome. Like, mat 9 heavies are ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
They'll scrap stuff.
She's one of the few Circle casters that can happily run without a Gorax.
Right. I think so. Let's go over her spells real quick. She's got Occultation.
Yep.
It's a pretty common spell. Gives a friendly model or unit stealth. She has Soothing Song, which is a bizarre spell. You remove 1 Fury point from each friendly living faction war beast currently in this model's control area. It can only be cast once per turn. It costs 1. It's range, self, AoE, control. It's kind of a... Well, I guess we'll talk more about the spells in depth once I go through the whole list. Spirit Door is the moneymaker. It's cost 3, range, control.
And one of the most confusing bloody spells to read in the game.
So I'm going to read you the description... Select a model in this model's battle group in its control area. If this model is selected, immediately place it within 2 inches of another model in its battle group that was in its control area at the time the spell was cast. If another model in this battle group is selected, immediately place that model within 2 inches of this model. A model cannot advance or attack after being placed by Spirit Door this turn.
Now, to give the English language translation of that, pick two models in your control area, you and one of your beast. You either move Kaya to within 2 inches of the beast, or the beast to within 2 inches of Kaya, one or the other.
Yes, and like most teleportation spells, it says you can't attack or advance after it. And then her final spell, Evan's favorite, is Spirit Fang. Cost 2, range 10. A model damaged by Spirit Fang suffers minus 2 speed and defense for 1 round.
It is POW 12.
It's POW 12, yes. It is an offensive spell.
Boosted POW 12 kills casters.
Boosted POW 12 will kill casters. More on that in a bit. So of the spells that you're going to... Like, you'll cast Occultation turn 1 on some unit. So oftentimes on Kaya. I mean, it's one of the things that gives her a little bit more survivability. Her having stealth, or like putting stealth in one of your heavies can be pretty good too. To kind of shield it from some of the more shootier elements.
I like Occultation on Slaughterhousers.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because it is friendly model unit. It's not faction.
Yeah.
Yep.
It lets Slaughterhousers get down the field.
Right, because Slaughterhousers will get shot off the table.
Yep.
Soothing Song is a spell that you will not really cast that often.
Ever.
It's incredibly corner case. It lets you have that one turn where you can hypothetically run everything hot.
And still transfer.
Yeah.
But it's a very, very corner case spell.
Now, the two moneymakers on her spell card are Spirit Door and Spirit Fang. So Spirit Door is phenomenal. You can alpha strike with a beast and save it. Like, you can teleport it back to her. You can do tricky stuff with her. You can kind of put her in a position. Because she's only Fury 6, so she has to work to get her control. Like, she's got to manage her control area pretty carefully. So Spirit Door lets you put her into a place to activate some beasts and then get her out of harm's way.
And if you've ever heard the phrase out there, if you're a newer player and you've heard the phrase yo-yoing, this is one of the spells that refers to in Circle. She can yo-yo her beasts back or vice versa.
And then Spirit Fang, I'll let Evan cover Spirit Fang.
Yeah. Spirit Fang, I feel like Nathan might have underestimated Spirit Fang.
No, I think Spirit Fang is a great spell.
It's minus 2 speed and minus 2 defense, POW 12, it's range 10, it costs 2.
You have to be damaged.
Yeah, to affect those penalties. But it's a really solid spell, and it kind of, when you first look at it and kind of glancing down her card, it's easy to kind of mistake it as kind of another crappy nuke. But that, the minus speed, they can't charge, they can't.
Can't trample, slam.
And you can use it to tie up people if you want to, like, tie up beasts and things like that. If you want to throw it out and you've got somebody in their face and you want to smack them with a Spirit Fang and then Spirit Door away.
The defense buff on top of Pack Hunters means any heavy that you get to something that you want to kill is not going to have to worry about missing.
Oh, yeah, it's going to
die. You just got to worry about the armor cracking.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing about Spirit Fang is now, in a world of crappy nukes, it's a really nice crappy nuke.
Yeah.
But the thing you have to be really careful about is it's a POW 12, which on Vegas odds, because I hate the term average dice, on Vegas odds, it's not going to damage most heavies without boosting it.
Correct.
And
you probably got to boost both ways.
Yeah, and on a 6 Fury, you're probably going to have to boost if it's that crucial to hit. There's the reason possibility of that. So you almost have to look at it and remember, it's a 2, 3, or 4 cost spell.
Correct.
Which means more often than not, it's half her stack.
Yeah.
Now, and that I think that segues nicely into her feat. Her feat says, place up to 3 fury points on each friendly faction war beast in Kaya's battle group that is in her control area. She can immediately leech fury points from war beasts in her battle group in her control area. So if she basically gets to pretend that she's P. Asphyxius for 1 round.
Oh, yeah.
Or Chromac, or any of the other casters that like to replenish their fury.
Epic Hexerus,
yes.
So, it's a popular mechanic.
So her feat, like, if you need to Spirit Fang 2 things in a turn, or if you need to Spirit Door 3 of your beasts in a turn, you're going to have to use her feat to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Now, looking at her card, and like I said, I'm the guy that doesn't know Circle on this show.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to her stat card, the crit knockdown feels like a trap.
Yes,
because it makes you think that she can do something in melee. Yeah,
it is.
And
outside of Spirit Dooring away, like, you could try to run her in there, but at that point you're almost better off just throwing a Spirit Fang from safety.
Right.
And then, I think the crit knockdown on her is definitely a trap.
Let me ask this, because I've seen this done a lot of times as the Hail Mary. So you tell me if this is Hail Mary or just you can still, even if the game is toilet bowling, find a better way to do this. I've watched people just charge her in, 6 focus, swing away, feet, 6 more focus, and swing away. And try to melee assassinate with
it
her.
Depends on the caster you're playing against.
Yeah.
If you're playing against somebody that a PAL 11 does not hurt, you will not kill them.
Yeah, you're just wasting your time. You're going to get yourself killed.
Yeah. So, however, if you're playing against, like, an armor 14 caster, go for it.
One of the old men?
Yeah. Playing against, like, an old man, somebody like that.
I'd hit him with a spirit fang before I charged in.
Correct. Yeah, you could do that.
It'd make it a little easier. Yeah. That way you can safely, hopefully not have to boost the hit and save some of that fury.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're fishing for the crit, you know, I think it's a trap.
Yeah, I agree.
So, and obviously with Pack Hunter, with the... I know the possible exception, a lot of people say if you take all living warbeasts, the exception to the rule is you'd still take Megalith. Do you take Megalith with her, or do you just say no rocks?
No. I don't think so. There's so many other casters that use Megalith.
I mean, in a two-list format, Megalith's going to be elsewhere.
Yeah.
Always. I mean, there's just not...
Right.
She doesn't do much of anything for him.
Yeah,
he's really good, and he does stuff for everybody, but he's better in other places.
I mean, his Animus gives a debuff, a defense debuff, and Spirit Fang does kind of a similar thing, so I don't think you need it, per se. So, we mentioned the Gorax earlier, and I think this is a very important war beast for anybody... that's playing in circle, you're almost always going to see a Gorax.
Unless they're not running Living Beast, but...
Correct.
Not many people do that.
So the Gorax is speed 5. He's a light war beast, and almost all the light war beasts have stats similar to this. Mad 6, defense 12, armor 16. He's got a left and a right arm, both open fists. You can throw with him if you need to, but it's PAL 12s. He's got a fairly nice-sized body. His threshold's kind of low, but... The big thing about the Gorax is actually Fury 4, which I believe it's the only light war beast in the game to be Fury 4.
That might be right.
Yeah, I can't think of anything.
And it's a bargain at 4 points. The moneymaker for the Gorax is his Animus. It's called Primal. It costs 2, it's range 6, and it says target friendly living war beast gains plus 2 strength and mat for 1 round and automatically frenzies during your next control phase. And then the Gorax has an ability called Pain Response. While damaged, this model can charge or make power attacks without being forced. That's sometimes relevant, but like I said, you're mostly using the Gorax for Primal.
Yeah, he falls into the solidly, so kind of generally more of a support piece.
Right.
And worth noting, how many points is he?
Four points.
4 points. Worth noting, taking a Gorax with Kaya, if you just wanted to stack strength on strength, means Pack Counter and Primal, you're plus 4 mat.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of dumb.
Yes.
It's, at that point, it's a little ridiculous. Now, you're like, look at me, I'm mad 11.
I need to point out that all of Circle's War Beast's base power plus strength are balanced around Gorax. Every single one.
Oh, yeah.
All of them are. Even the non-living models, which doesn't make any damn sense, but they are balanced around Primal, too. Because when I first started playing Circle, I thought everything was pillow-fisted. But then I started putting Gorax on all of my lists, and all my guys started killing big stuff.
I mean, all the Warpoles can also warp for strength.
They can,
that,
yeah.
So you can really crank that strength up there.
Yes, so keep in mind that the War Beasts in faction are balanced around the Gorax. So just because the Gorax is going to be casting Primal or allows your caster to cast Primal, that doesn't mean that he can't hit stuff. At PAL 12, like, even if he primals himself, he goes to mat 8 PAL 14s, and he can run a charge for free. So, like, if your opponent, if they give a clear line to like a caster or another important piece that isn't a heavy, the Gorax can you do a lot of damage.
I mean, he does a decent job of throwing things around as well with that open. I mean, he's got a strength 9, which is for a light is nothing to sneeze at.
Right. And anything with 2 open fists actually opens you up to a lot of scenario play just for being able to maneuver things around the board.
Yeah. He can headbutt, set up other stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
he's got a lot of play.
For 4 points, he does have a lot of play. Now, you have to be careful with him because if he dies, you lose Primal.
Correct.
So you do kind of want to have him almost as a second wave or a counterpunch.
Yeah. Unless you were, I mean, most of the time he's speed 5, and that's like really slow for a circle orbit.
Yeah.
Now, like, I know the Menoff players are listening to this and they're like, oh, come on, speed 5. That's like our best. That's like our fastest.
No, I know.
Come on, guys, shut up. But speed 5 is really slow for a circle war beast. So most of the time he's going to be lagging behind the whole army.
Yeah,
he does not have Pathfinder.
No.
That's something I need to point out about a lot of the living war beasts in circle. You read your opponent's cards and read your card, because a lot of the living war beasts in circle do not actually have
Pathfinder. The only exception is Stalker. Is the only
Correct.
One with Pathfinder,
yes.
Naturally.
Now, there are ways around that, and we'll cover that in future podcasts, but there are ways around it. But most of the, like the Riphorn Satyr, no Pathfinder.
Now, let me ask this before we move much further. Let's say you are the person playing against Kaya.
Mm-hmm.
What are we looking out for if I'm playing against Kaya the Wildborn for the first time, or if she gives me a lot of trouble? What tricks am I looking out for?
You gotta watch out for Spirit Door. Now, there's not much you can do against Spirit Door, but you gotta watch out for that. You can't try to trade a heavy for one of their heavies. Like put one of your heavies in a position that will bait their heavy to charge it, thinking that you can just counter charge it on the next turn and kill it. That's not going to work.
That's really true of Circle in general. Circle is really good at denying the peace trade.
Right.
Getting something for absolutely nothing with their stones, with Spirit Door.
Sprint.
And, you know, they really can just hit you and be gone. Granted, if you can catch them, they're going to fall down like a sack of potatoes.
Yes.
And with the Gorax, I play Signar predominantly, as some of our listeners will know. I dedicate, you know, defenders and storm walls to shooting this bugger off the table when I see him, because he will get my stuff dead.
He's got a lot of boxes. Like, he's harder to kill than he looks, and it really depends on, like, if you're like playing a shooting army, most of the time all I got to do is get engaged.
Well, that's why I dedicate like the larger guns, the PAL 15 and 16 guns, to get rid of him, because
I can see. And the thing is, like, most of the time he's not going to have stealth. The Gorax is pretty easy. The Gorax is easy to kill if he's in a position to be killed.
Right.
But a lot of times I use Gorax as either a Fury Bank or stuff to transfer to. Like, I'll transfer to the Gorax before I'll transfer to any Circle Heavy.
Okay.
Well, Circle Heavies are basically paper thin.
Yes. Yeah, that is a generally true statement.
They're
outside
paper thin
of,
for heavies.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're super, they really can't hold up to another heavy.
So what are we looking at next?
Next, we're going to cover Balder the Stone Cleaver. That's P. Balder. He's mat 7. He's speed 5. He's got Pathfinder. He's defense 14, armor 16. He has 17 boxes, and he's got a PAL 7 sword with PS plus 14. He's got an ability called Elemental Mastery. War beasts in this model's battle group with construct beginning their activations in his control area can charge and make power attacks without being forced. This model can heal friendly war beasts in his battle groups that have construct. It's important to note, because the circle constructs cannot be healed by their caster.
Right.
So if you take out a, so like if you're playing against Megalith, they're playing Megalith like a P. Kruger,
Epic, anybody else, yeah. They break his mind,
and he doesn't roll high enough to heal two attributes or whatever, then that attribute is done. You don't have to worry about healing it.
Yeah.
P. Balder, you still do, because he can heal the constructs. He also has this ability called Forest Walk. While he's complete within a forest, this model can forfeit its normal movement to use Forest Walk. If it does, choose a location complete within this model's control area that's completely within a forest. Remove this model from the forest and place it in the chosen location. This model cannot use Forest Walk while knocked down. And then finally, his weapon has Weight of Stone. When a model is damaged by this weapon, it suffers -3 speed and defense for one round.
Which is an amazing ability.
Yes.
It's on hit.
Megalith has that on his fist as well.
Yeah.
Then it is important to note that both of the abilities are called Weight of Stone, so you can't hit somebody with P. Balder and then hit somebody with Megalith and have them -6 speed, -6 defense. It doesn't work.
No double Weight of Stone.
Yeah, you don't get to double dip there. P. Balder's spell lists, he's got Earth Spikes, which is a range 10 AoE 3 PAL 13 nuke that, while making the attack, ignore cover and the +2 defense bonus for elevation on a critical hit. Models hit or knocked down. He's got Rapid Growth. It's a 2-cost spell with range control AoE 4. You place an AoE completely in this model's control area. The AoE is a forest that remains in play as long as the upkeep is paid. He's got Solid Ground, which is a spell Gorton's got. While this model's control area, your friendly models cannot be knocked down and do not suffer blast damage. And then his last spell is a buff, Stone Skin, it costs 2, range 6. Target friendly faction model or unit gains plus 2 strength and armor, but suffers minus 1 speed defense. And I'll go ahead and cover his feet while I'm at it. While in Baldur's control area, friendly models gain cover. While in Baldur's control area, enemy models never have Pathfinder and treat open terrain as rough terrain. Broken Earth lasts for 1 round.
Worth noting for those people out there, again, who are relatively new or sub-such, Colossals and Gargantuans do not have the Pathfinder icon on them, but they have Pathfinder. It's incumbent to them. So under his feet, they lose it.
Yes. Under no circumstances can you get Pathfinder in Baldur's feet area.
Right.
Now, he's only Fury 6, so it's a small-ish control area.
Yeah.
P. Baldur, in my opinion, is one of the better circle scenario casters.
Oh, definitely. He's also fairly resilient.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, 14, 16 with 17 boxes is, like, average.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 16 armor on a warlock is nothing to sneeze at.
Right.
18 if he chooses.
Yes, because you can use Stone Skin.
Because he can't Stone Skin himself.
And Stone Skin is one of the few ways to buff the Construct War Beast's attack power. Like, Wold Wardens are garbage. They're like PAL 15.
Yeah,
now, Wold Guardians are PAL 17.
Geomancy Wodes, which are, I always get confused.
Wold Wardens.
Wold Wardens, the problem with them is they're balanced around Geomancy.
Correct, yeah. You're paying your points for Geomancy. You're not paying, and they have like combo attack, which is hilarious.
Well, they do,
But if you're putting Stone Skin on a Wold Warden, you're messing up.
You're doing something wrong. Honestly, if you're not running him in tier, I wouldn't run.
People, there's tier. I don't have his tier list on me, but his tier list is really, really good, and it was really, really good before Colossals came out. I have no idea if it's still good or not.
Peabalder's tier is, let's see here, is the Rock of Ouroboros. You can take non-character construct War Beasts and Megalith, Druids of Ouroboros, Stone Ward and Wold Stalkers, Sentry Stone and Mannequins, Shifting Stones, Black Clad Wayfarer, Druid Wilder, no battle engines of any kind. At Tier 1, the Sentry Stone and Mannequin units can be placed up to 20 inches from the back edge of your deployment zone. At Tier 2, you have to have one or more Shifting Stone units and one or more Sentry Stone and Mannequin units. Up to one War Beast in your battle group gains advanced deploy for each Shifting Stone or Sentry Stone and Mannequin unit in the army, which means simply by hitting the tier, you've got at least 2 AD War Beasts. Let's see. At 3, you have to have 2 Stone Ward and Wold Stalker units, and they gain advanced move. And if you have Megalith, all of your heavy War Beasts are minus 1 cost.
Yes, this tier list is pretty phenomenal. I've playtested it.
Okay, you go all the way to tier 4 with it every time.
You go to tier 4 every single time. The list is so incredibly resilient to shooting because you've got like a 20-inch deployed Sentry Stones that your dudes can turn into forests. You don't take Wold Wardens in this list. You take Wold Guardians, which are the big Ram Fist dudes. They've got Flesh of Clays and Animus. You put Stone Skin on Megalith. He rocks around like Armor 21. You can't shoot this list off the board.
I can attest to that.
Yeah.
I've played against Baldur's tier list more than once as Signar and have literally just went there and go, well,
yep.
Defenders get to charge.
Yeah.
Because the guns do nothing at that point.
And that list just gets in the zone and just sits there, and you're never going to move it out.
You can't dislodge it, yeah. So it's a really good tier list, and that's something. I mean, if you're going to play against P. Baldur in a tournament setting, you're probably going to be playing against this tier list.
One thing with that tier list, because I thought about this and I thought I was really excited, because Gargantuans are War Beasts, and it does not specify heavy, but apparently, according to the rules, you can never AD a Gargantuan.
Correct.
So
yep.
Don't get excited if you see that.
You can never AD them. You can never advance move them.
No.
Because it's just. It's there.
They have their own deployment phase. They must do pre-deployment, so they have their own deployment phase. They cannot move outside of their own normal movement, so you got to keep that in mind.
The thing about the P. Baldur tier list is that it's actually pretty weak against other Horde armies.
Like, it is.
Because its armor cracking abilities and its threat ranges are pretty small.
It feels like it's a Signar drop.
It's a really good Signar drop.
It feels pretty good
against Rhett.
I was going to say, it feels like a Rhett drop.
It's pretty good against Rhett. I like it versus Kador. Now, if they're not running... I mean, because a lot of Kador players don't run a whole lot of Jax. So if they don't have like a colossal, even if they've got a colossal, it can't do that much damage to you because your army doesn't take blast damage.
Right.
Because it's solid ground.
It can be a good merc draw, depending on the merc army.
Oh, right. It shuts down like a medallion and Dugan crazy blast earthbreaker silliness.
And actually, because of the because of some of the other stuff that's in the list, it actually seems like it would be a decent convergence drop. Because convergence can have a lot of stuff that is reliant on certain ranged abilities.
Yeah.
So you shut down about a third of what the Cypher can do, among other things. So it's not a bad convergence drop.
Yeah. It's just, it's, and honestly, it's weakest against high defense heavies. Because your Wolds have such low fury that they like, they're only mat 6. They have to boost the hit. They, like, you're playing, like, Angelus's are terrible for this list.
It feels like it's a horrible Legion drop.
You can't knock
it down. Yeah. I mean, unless Circle gets something that's, like, the equivalent of, like, Woad Choir. Woads, with the exception of probably this new guy with Synergy, just can't do work.
Yeah. Now, the list does have deceptive threat ranges, because you get advanced deploy the World Guardians, and you have 2 units of Shifting Stones in the tier. And what you end up doing is you advance deploy the Shifting Stones right next to the World Guardian. The World Guardian, turn 1, tramples and Flesh of Clays. And then the Shifting Stones teleport to the World Guardian and then have it set up to teleport the World Guardian further on the next turn. And if you deploy your Shifting Stones correctly, you can teleport 1 World Guardian to the other set and then teleport even further.
Yeah, that's what is referred to as the double port. It's where you're jumping them from one set of stones to another set of stones to an ultimate destination.
But, I mean, generally speaking, and for a lot of people, if you're starting with the Battle Box, and most people, everybody knows about the Primal Warpwolf Stalkers and so on and so forth, Balder runs Living Beasts really well.
He does, yes. Now, you have to keep in mind that Stoneskin keeps your beast from charging.
Stoneskin's not for beasts, it's for blood trackers.
Stoneskin can be put on your infantry units. It's really good on blood trackers, because blood trackers have thrown, so that means any strength bonuses go to the pal of their weapon, so they go to pal 11 weapon masters, pal 13 against their prey, which is nothing to sneeze at. Stoneskin's also really good on the Skinwalkers.
It is, yeah.
Because they are armor 20 while engaged. They actually go to pal 15, which is more than enough to hurt other medium base.
With their new UA, you can really just stick them in there, and they can really chew some stuff up with Stoneskin on them.
Earth Spikes is on my list of favorite nukes in the game, because a lot of people, if they're not careful, if it is one of those people who sits there and goes, "Can I see your card?" And they don't, that those are favorite words to hear to a lot of players. If they say, you know, "Can I see your spell list?" A lot of people feel safe on a small hill or something of that nature and will clump people together for the defense bonus. And Earth Spikes, while very rarely do I find use out of a lot of the spell nukes in the game, that one I see utility in.
Yeah.
Because it ignores cover, it ignores elevation.
It's AoE 3, and if it crits, it knocks everything down under the AoE. So if people like put like a shield guard unit too close, you just target that guy instead of wherever the high defense is. You got a chance. You're fishing for the crit to knock him down.
If you want to run the rather terrible Woad Wrath with him, then you get boosted rolls on that Earth Spike, but I don't think it's worth the money.
Are we going to wind up having an episode dedicated to the two huge bases at some point?
Trying to redeem them?
No. The Celestial Fulcrum is amazing.
Good. It's really, really good.
It is well worth the 9 points.
Yeah. I've got... I saw... Like, I've owned a Celestial Fulcrum for about 2 years now.
Okay.
I have never played it.
I've never seen it.
It's at Richard's house.
Which means you'll never see it.
I saw it the other day.
Oh, was he playing it?
No.
Maybe you should take it home.
At the time, I didn't have the battle film for it. And I was like, I don't know where to put that to keep it from getting destroyed.
In a bag.
I saw the Celestial Fulcrum the other day. But yeah, we'll definitely cover the World Wrath at some point on the podcast.
The World Wrath, I will say this for him. With P. Morvana, you can do some... With Harvest and P. Morvana, you can do ridiculous things.
So now we know what we'll be talking about when we talk about Morvana.
Yeah.
So...
All right, so we mentioned Shifting Stones. I feel like it's very, very important. I wanted to cover them in the very first podcast, because if you were going to play, and I know people who are listening to this that have played against Circle a bunch of times, you're probably rolling your eyes when you hear Shifting Stones. But Shifting Stones is a unit. They're all constructs. They have advanced deploy. They're command 4. That's important. Their defense 5, their armor 18. They have 5 boxes each, and they cost 2 points. And you can take the field allowance on them is 2. The stones themselves are immobile, which means they have no movement or action and cannot be knocked down or moved. Its front arc extends 360 degrees. It has no melee range, cannot engage, is automatically hit by melee attacks. Now, here's an ability that many people who played against Shifting Stones probably don't know that they actually have. It's called Serenity. At the beginning of your control phase, before leeching, you can remove 1 fury point from a friendly faction war beast within 1 inch of this model. 1 inch. 1 inch of this model.
1 inches, I like that.
Shifting powers. Choose one of the following effects at the start of this unit's activations. Healing field. Models in this unit that are in formation and friendly faction models within 1 inch of it or more of them heal D3 damage points. Roll separately for each model. Healing field can heal war beasts with construct. That's important because, like I said earlier, you can't heal your construct war beast through the normal rules of the game. The stones, and this ability is the one that they're most known for. It's called shifting. Place each model in this unit that is. Well, I'm sorry, not this one. Place each model in this unit that is in formation anywhere within 8 inches of its current location. This is how the stones get around since they're immobile and can't move around. Now, teleportation is the ability that is their moneymaker. If all 3 shifting stone models in this unit are in formation, place 1 friendly faction model whose base is within the triangular area between them anywhere within 8 inches of its current location. The placed model must forfeit its movement after being placed this turn.
Now, 2 things I would want to point out. Number 1 is, and this is something that I watch a lot of new players make a mistake with. It says, choose one of the following effects during the unit's activation. You don't want to know how many times I've caught Circle players actually screwing that phrase up. It's not you may. You have to do it. And that comes into play actually even more so on Warp Wolves than it does anything else.
Yes.
Yeah, you have to warp with them.
You have to warp something at the beginning of their activation. But the second thing that takes a lot of people by surprise, spoilers, it's happened to me, is when these guys shift, not only is it within, not completely within their triangular area, that means you can also draw the triangular area from the outside of the bases. It's
correct.
Not aligned from center base to center base.
Yes. If any part... And the command 4, I said the command 4 is important. We're leaving the unit attachment off of Shifting Stones for this podcast, but the command 4 means whichever model is the leader model in the unit, the other 2 have to be within 4 inches of that model. So you can actually make pretty wide triangles. And if you have them in almost a straight line, that's still a triangle.
Right.
So you got to go back to your ninth grade geometry.
It's a hell of an isosceles triangle, but it's still a triangle.
Right. One unit is good, but 2, I don't want to say it's mandatory, but 2 is pretty close to mandatory for a lot of lists.
I'm going to go against Nathan on this, because I have pretty much everybody knows, and most decent people who've played for any length of time and played against Circle at all, know to dedicate an absurd amount of fire to killing 1 shifting stone out of both of those units as quickly as possible, because you can't teleport them anymore. You can use their other 2 abilities, but there's no more leaping your dude's way out at crazy angles. And they don't do anything else. They're 4 points.
They're
5 with the UA.
They're fury management, and they can heal beasts, but it's really, you're spending a lot of points for that at that point.
And I'm actually going to jump in here. They are lethal if there's a full unit.
Yeah.
They are annoying as hell when you kill 1.
Yes.
Because the healing is there, sure. The other part is there. Here's the annoying part. It's a freaking small base model that's 18 armor with 5 wounds. That means you actually have to dedicate something to kill it. These things block charge lanes. They clog up. All I will sometimes go out of my way to kill off the whole unit because it's almost not worth leaving them alive.
In SteamroLar 2014, they cannot control objectives because immobile models cannot control objectives.
Right.
But they can contest.
Uh-huh.
If you don't care about them being in, you just teleport them wherever. They're really good against Borka, Stumbling Drunk. You just teleport them, pin them in, so that you can't wander off. There's a lot of utility after they aren't being used for what they're known for.
It's true. I've noticed that, and I've tried to start playing without them because I almost feel like they're a crutch. A lot of people in Circle. Now, they are really useful, and they definitely let you do some unexpected things, but Circle has a lot of weird ability to threat, and for the same point value, you could put in two black lads who have a spray that knock people down. They have Hunter's Mark. And you know, you wouldn't get phase jump off of them because they don't have.
Once you kill one, their killing power is gone. Yeah. Their killing power comes from their teleportation ability.
Yeah, and shifting stones. I mean, like if you talk about order of activations in War Machine, shifting stones is definitely one of those units that will make you learn the order of activation very, very quickly.
Oh yeah,
because the unit itself has to activate before you activate whatever you wanted to actually murder with.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, shifting stones are really good.
And if you want to cast, if you're gonna cast primal or any other buffs on the guy that you're fixing to teleport, you need to do that before you activate the shifting stones and teleport them out of range.
Right.
So,
we've actually through complete accident, we've explained what you do against shifting stones. You kill one out of each unit. That gets rid of the lethality of them. With Balder, you can't shoot him off the table, realistically. So what are you looking at if you're playing against Balder?
I mean, you can, because you're not going to put Flesh of Clay on shifting stones. I mean,
you can shoot the stones off the table. Yeah. I mean, his army, the pieces that you need gone, you can't just arbitrarily shoot off the table.
I mentioned it before, it's kind of low in mobility.
Yeah, you cannot maneuver it.
And it may throw a lot of people for a loop playing in circle, because they might expect more beasts in your deployment zone on turn two or whatever. That's not going to happen in this list. Number of models is pretty good against him too, because even though he's got some AOE attacks between Earth Spikes and Megalith can like Geomancy, but for the most part, he's got to kill one model at a time.
Yeah, you can bog him down.
Out of tier, especially if you're going first, it feels like this is one of the few circle lists you can actually jam.
Yes.
Well, if he's running out of tier, he's going to run Blood Trackers, and he's going to run Warp...
Stalk.
Warpborn Skinwalkers. In tier is really where you can jam him, because those...
I feel like it's a little harder, though, because there's so much AD in the
list. It's a really bad Crix matchup, in my opinion. Like Crix takes his sack lunch, because you got, like... Bane Knights, whatever, the wolves themselves are so low defense that they get hit by everything, and they don't want to take weapon master attacks.
Right.
So like I feel like Crix isn't in good shape.
Menoth's
probably in a pretty good shape. Anything that's got
lots of weapon masters.
Yeah, lots of weapon masters or can get to really high pals.
Sentinels can chew him up.
Yeah. So
you want the ability to crack armor.
Yeah, you don't.
You have to have the ability to crack armor.
Yeah.
With that, in a multi-list format, not being able to plan around it, because a lot of times against Circle, you're like, I don't have to crack armor because your guys are kind of paper thin.
Yeah.
And you can see that P. Balder list, that might make you
drop
second guess.
I mean, armor cracking is such the thing in the meta these days, and just the ability to punch through that high armor. I mean, that's why we're seeing the resurgence of the medium-based infantry and all that stuff. So, I feel like most lists have an answer for armor.
Yeah.
The thing with him is your answer to armor can't be range. It needs to be melee.
Right. If you started playing in the last year or so, you probably haven't seen his Balder.
No, I mean, people aren't running it right now because there's so much.
There's ways around it.
Beef on the table nowadays.
Right.
And if you run against like the Miserable Meat Mountain, the trolls so happily drop everywhere, or Scorn's version or Menoth's version, you just end up stuck in the middle of the board forever.
One of you is going to clock the other.
That's a new one for me. The Miserable Meat Mountain? I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
So, we go from a caster you've probably haven't seen.
I think troll players call it the Magical Meat Mountain. And everybody else calls it
the Miserable Meat Mountain.
Fair. So, now to a caster we probably have seen.
So, we're going to Kruger 2, Kruger the Stormlord. And he's great. He's awesome. His friends card says, "I am good."
Nathan wants to marry Kruger the Stormlord,
but South Carolina doesn't allow that.
Yeah.
So his defense and armor are pretty slack. It's 15-15. It's kind of average. He is immune to electricity. He's mat and rat 6. He's speed 6. His gun is range 10, rate of fire 3. PAL 12, it does lightning damage. That's important if you play against Signar. And his gun has sustained attack on it, which means if you hit with your first lightning bolt, you get to hit him 2 more times for free. You don't even have to roll. And then his melee weapon is called Worm Tongue. It's a PAL 12. It's magical. It's got reach, and it's got disruption on it.
And I think that falls into the category of, if you're using it, the game has gone south.
Correct. The only time I've ever used that to great effect was against Corey Hockman. He was playing Nemo 2.
Oh, the irony.
And I had to charge Kruger to like a storm clad to disrupt it, because otherwise the storm clad was going to paste me on my next turn.
Oh, nice.
But anyway, so Kruger has flight. He can advance through terrain. It's flight. You know what flight does. He's inspiration circle. Friendly circle models in this model's command range never flee and immediately rally. And then he's got his weapon abilities too. He's got 16 hitboxes.
Now, for those people who might not know what flight does, just for the sake of argument, terrain and obstacles, you go through without penalty, essentially like Pathfinder. You advance through obstructions and other models as long as you can move completely past them. So if for some reason your movement would end you on it, you back until you would not have been on it. And you ignore intervening models when declaring a charge. Please note that that doesn't mean you get to ignore free strikes.
Yep.
Probably important to know.
You only get to ignore free strikes if you're Saren.
Or you have the Animus from the Scarfell Postal Griffin.
Yes.
Which, why are you running one?
Yes. It's going to be a couple podcasts before we talk about Scarfell's Griffins. All right, so his spell list is phenomenal. He's only got 4 spells, but don't let that trick you. He's got Gallows. Cost 3, range 10, pal 13. When an enemy model is hit by this attack, it can be pushed D6s directly towards Gallows' point of origin. Note, if you're using Gallows Groves, it goes towards the Gallows Grove and not Kruger.
I will have to say this for Dennis. Gallows is one of his favorite spells.
It is one of his favorite spells.
Oh, it's an awesome spell.
Lightning Storm. Costs 3, it's range 8, it's AoE 3, it's pal 10. It says models hit suffer a pal 10 electrical damage roll, so there's no blast damage in this. It's if you are hit by it, you take a pal 10. The AoE remains in play for one round. Models entering or ending their activations in AoE suffer a pal 10 electrical damage roll. It could be used kind of like covering fire. Stormwall. You spend 3 mana, you get to put a Stormwall Colossal into play.
He meant to say Fury.
Yes, you spend 3 Fury, you put a Stormwall into play. You spend 3 mana. You spend 3. It's a ranged self AoE control. While in this model's control area, enemy's models suffer minus 5 range on their range attacks. When an enemy AoE range attack deviates from a point in this model's control area, after determining the deviation distance, you choose the direction the AoE deviates. Stormwall lasts for one round. It's not an upkeep. That's very important. And then finally, he's got Telekinesis. It's range 2. Cost 2, range 8. Place target model completely within 2 inches of its current location. When telekinesis targets an enemy model, is an offensive spell and requires a magic attack roll. A model can be affected by telekinesis only once per turn. I'll go ahead and cover his feet. Enemy models currently in Kruger's control area are pushed 3 inches directly away from Kruger and suffer minus 2 speed for one round. You determine the order of models removed. So,
this is, in my opinion, my somewhat uneducated opinion, this is Circle's single best board control caster.
Absolutely. He's my favorite caster.
Granted, I'm pandering to the host, but still.
He's my favorite caster in Circle, bar none.
He has TK, which certainly puts him high on the list.
Oh, yeah, I mean, TK's great.
He's got Gallows, which is pretty obvious. He has Stormwall, which is going to protect you from guns to a point.
Stormwall... It will just frustrate a lot of people. Because Fish lost to this, Stormwall does not reduce the range of sprays because sprays cannot have their range reduced at all.
It does, however, really make people think twice about lobbing AoEs all willy-nilly because you can make it just go back on all their stuff.
Yes.
And Lightning Storm, which has a board control element, might be the one spell on his card that I don't ever see casting.
Geomancy'd it.
It's really good to Geomancy because it costs 3, so you get to Geomancy, and you're not going to cast it without Gallows Groves.
Yeah.
Because you need the Arc Node, because it's only range 8, which is not enough range. Not enough range. Mm. To put him into harm's way.
An immediate geomancy trick I would see, and you tell me if this works because I might be completely off base. Can you not geomancy's Gallows and then charge the target or move in or just walk into the target and Gallows?
Yeah.
Or have other stuff there get to it? Okay. Yeah. I want to make sure because it seemed like a neat trick.
Yeah. Megaloth only has like an 8.5-inch range, so if he can geomancy it and then Gallows them towards him, then he can charge it.
Oh, awesome.
So, another geomancy trick is telekinesis. Obviously, you can use the telekinesis to move their models around. Sure. But like, if you're bogged down in melee, you can punch a dude and kill him, and then telekinesis yourself to teleport over to somebody else, and then throw your other initial.
Yeah,
Telekinesis has got so much play. Telekinesising shifting stones is ridiculous.
To sneak things in
there.
It's
very, very... Yeah, you can either put something in the shifting stones triangle that they weren't expecting, or you can move the triangle itself somewhere that they weren't expecting. Yeah. Now, keep in mind, you got to keep all your stuff in command, but...
4 inches normally, or 8 inches if you have the UA.
Yeah. First off, if Kruger's card was blank except for Stormwall and Telekinesis, he would already be good. But his Rate of Fire 3 PAL 12 gun with sustained attack puts him pretty high up there as far as a ranged assassination potential.
He can, oops, kill a caster.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are some drops where, you know, Nemo, Striker, Epic Striker, anybody with that snazzy immune to electricity can make him, really just eliminates that option for
him. Right, right. Makes him play honest.
Yeah, it does. And really, you disappear that crazy teleport up, float up in the air, zap them into a billion pieces. And it makes you kind of have to play more for the scenario or throw in a beast to kill him. It kind of negates his ability to actually do the work himself.
If they don't do that, even without shifting him around with shifting stones, he's got an 18-inch threat on a gun that's going to just hit. If he hits you once, it's a good game.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases.
Yeah. It's less good against hordes because they can transfer, but it's really good against the less sturdy War Machine casters.
I reiterate the reason I bought Nemo.
He's really, really good. Like his feet. Like, I mean, we could do an entire podcast. I could talk about an hour about his feet. How much play his feet has. His feet opens up charge lanes that weren't there. His feet's ridiculous against some armies. Like, if your opponent's playing like a melee based army and you move up and you feet and they go backwards 3 inches and they get -2 speed, so they have to like run and they can't run as far on the next. It's stupid. His feet is so stupid.
Now you have to be careful with when you use his feet. His feet is not just move them willy nilly. It is
correct.
It is directly away.
Right.
So you actually can screw yourself over if you do it wrong. He's in the wrong position.
Exactly. Positioning is key with his feet. Something, and this is a trick that you have to be aware of. Because shifting stones can be advanced deployed, what I have done and what I have seen done, people will deploy the shifting stones in the regular control, in the regular deployment area. And they'll have one advanced deployed and then one deployed in the regular area, and you activate the first unit of stones and teleport Kruger to the second set, and then you teleport Kruger again, and then Kruger goes and feats your entire army turn one. Like, if you're going second, you can feat their entire army turn one, hit the entire thing, he casts Stormwall, and then he camps like four. So it's really hard to assassinate him gun-wise. You can't charge him.
Right.
So that is a trick to be aware of.
It is. I mean, you have to be...
There are cases where it's good and devastating. It's really good for scenario play.
Yeah. There are definitely times we'll get you killed.
Yes, yes.
You're just like, look at me, I'm hanging out in the wind. Oh, God, I'm dead.
15-15 to me is always a scary stat line to have on a caster.
It is.
Because it's defense that's just enough to get you hit, and it's armor that's just enough to get you killed.
Yeah. Neither of those are the magic numbers.
No.
Right.
He's just shy 1 point in defense and shy 2 points in armor.
Yeah. So, Kruger's amazing. Like, there are very few things that you could play with Kruger that are going to be terrible with him.
And one other thing on him that I don't think we can underestimate is inspiration.
Yes.
Because your entire army, as long as they're in his command, which is 9 inches, but still, as long as you're within that 18-inch bubble of him, you are effectively fearless.
Yep.
Which is actually becoming more of a thing nowadays with the...
Butcher 3.
Butcher 3, the multi-minimum unit Gatorman posse spam list that people are starting to run just to, like,
make them
force command checks.
Yeah.
Because they're, like, 6 to 8 minimum units of Gatorman posse and just say, just keep making command checks. You're going to fail eventually.
I mean, Command 9 has a... Command 8 has, like, a 1 in 3 chance of failing.
And anytime you make your opponent roll dice, you're winning the game.
Yeah. I definitely wanted to cover one of Circle's most important war beasts in this podcast. So I've included the Warpwolf Stalker. It's speed 6, it's strength 10, it's mat 6, it's defense 14, it's armor 17. It's got a claw that's a PS 14, and it's got a sword that is PS 16 with reach. And then the Stalker is actually one of he's got very few boxes for heavies goes, because I think he's only got like 24 or something like that. He's baby. And he costs 10 points. His animus is lightning strike, target friendly model gains sprint. Lightning strike lasts for one turn. It costs 2, it's range 6. He's a warp wolf, so he's got controlled warping at the beginning of the activation. You have to choose one of the effects. He can warp berserk, which means when he destroys one or more models with a melee attack during its combat action, immediately after the attack is resolved, make one additional melee attack against another model in its melee range. Prowl, it can gain stealth while it's in the terrain that provides concealment, the AoE of a spell that provides concealment, or the AoE of a cloud effect, or you can warp strength to give him +2 strength. He also has regeneration. This model can be forced to heal D3 damage points once per activation. This model cannot use regeneration in activation it runs. So the reason I included the Stalker, because the Stalker is the classic circle gotcha heavy. It's the one that between reach, Pathfinder speed 6, it's the workhorse. It's the one that gets teleported next to your caster and kills your caster.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it shares a very close place in your heart to Kruger.
Yes.
Like, Epic Kruger's right there in the center, and then right off in, like, the left valve is the Stalker.
Yeah. There was SCE Comic Con? I killed, like, 3 out of 4 casters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's...
I think I killed 3 out of 4 casters of Warpwolf Stalkers.
Oh, I mean, Warpwolf... The primal... Teleport Warpwolf Stalker is the just
it's classic. Classic circle.
And if you can just delete their shifting stone and delete their stalker, then they get really sad very quickly.
A lot of people claim Menoth is a synergy army. Circle is right up there next to him as far as synergy goes. When you start losing key pieces, it gets harder to win the game.
It becomes a snowball effect. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, Menoth and Circle, besides the fact that Menoth is just kind of apply, choir, and go, are fairly similar. They both have a lot of denial. They both have a lot of synergy.
Yeah, mechanics wise.
Mechanics. Yeah.
You look at stats, and
not how they play, and not but the feel. Like if you like, if you play, you know, if you like denial and synergy.
Yeah.
That kind of those two cornerstones of a play style, Circles and Menoth are both kind of opposite sides of the same coin.
Yeah, and so like the Stalker has. The Stalker's animus is phenomenal because it's not self only. You could put it on anyone. It's really good on guys like Wolflord Morag. It's really good on Lord of the Feast. It's important to note that the sprint it's after it's at the end of the model's activation, so it's not regular movement. So if you teleport with shifting stones, you don't lose your sprint move. You get to teleport, you kill something, you get to move away. And that's a huge trick. That's how Circle avoids like the heavy trades.
Yeah.
What you know, I'll activate my Stalker first. My Stalker scraps your heavy, and then it can sprint away.
If you can get that Stalker off the board, if you can force them to trade that Stalker, or if that Stalker gets in there and bad rolls and they fail to kill something to trigger that sprint, it's a godsend because you can just walk over there and almost anything can just delete a light.
Yes,
there are some
yes.
lights that can easily take a Stalker off the board.
At 17, armor 17, and it does not have many boxes at all.
I counted though. It's either 25 or 26.
Yeah, it is like Crick's heavy boxes wise.
Leaf
it's
in just, the wind.
Yeah, and they, Stalkers have a glass jaw.
Yeah, I mean, they have Prowl that can work for Prowl, but they have to have concealment, and unless you're running them with, like, Epic Morvana, who can just drop out Fog of War, you need the terrain for it if you're on the wrong board. So if you can put some shot, like, put shots into them early game and just take them away, it will make them very sad.
The defense 14 is where, is what, like, saves the Stalker from other heavies.
It does.
Because a lot of times they'll have to boost to hit.
It saves them from Warjacks.
Right, from Warjacks. But other like...
Warbeasts are just going to go and paste them.
All right, so that's pretty much what I wanted to cover. We got PK, we got Gorax, we got P. Balder, we got Shifting Stones, we got Kruger 2, and we got Stalker. So, yeah, I hope you enjoyed this episode. We'd love to hear your feedback. Of course, this is a work in progress. I'd love to get this thing kind of, I don't know, organized in such a way so that if you wanted to hear about a certain model, or if you think we need to go into more detail on stuff, if we need to break it down so that we only cover casters or war beasts or whatever. You know, just let us know. But other than that, I think we're good.
Yeah.
So, for Rage Quit Recon, this has been Nathan.
And Evan.
And Mike.
We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Rage Quit Recon, a Rage Quit Radio podcast. For information on this and all the other great RQR podcasts, visit our website at ragequitradio.blogspot.com.